Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, State Officers and Debt Collection Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 16, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Sharif v. Gilley. This case involves litigation between debtors to Ohio institutions and special counsel who sought to collect money owed to the institutions. Two questions were before the Supreme Court. One, do special counsel appointed by Ohio's Attorney General qualify as state officers exempt from the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act's governance? Two, is special counsel's use of the Attorney General's letterhead a false or misleading representation prescribed by FDCPA 1692E? The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit held that special counsel were independent contractors who could not claim an FDCPA exemption and remanded the case for trial on the deceptiveness issue. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Sixth Circuit and remanded the case. Writing for a unanimous court, Justice Ginsburg explained that, even assuming for the sake of argument special counsel do not rank as state officers, their use of the Attorney General's letterhead did not offend 1692E. Not fairly described as false or misleading, the use of the letterhead accurately conveyed that special counsel, in seeking to collect debts owed to the state, do so on behalf of and as instructed by the Attorney General. To discuss the case, we have Jennifer Mascott, who is an Olin Cyril Fellow in Law at Georgetown University Law Center. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Mascott.
On Monday, May 16th, the Supreme Court handed down its decision in Sharif v. Gilley, reversing the Sixth Circuit's opinion in this case. Sharif v. Gilley examined Ohio's practice of relying on third-party outside counsel to collect debts owed to various state institutions. In particular, the case involved a challenge to the special outside counsel's use of the state attorney general's letterhead in their debt collection correspondence. Two individuals owing money to Ohio institutions had brought this case, claiming that the special counsel's use of official letterhead violated the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or the FDCPA. The FDCPA seeks to address abusive debt collection practices by third-party debt collectors. Because third-party collectors typically don't have an ongoing relationship with the debtors, they have less accountability to deal fairly with these consumers. Congressional hearings during enactment of the FDCPA revealed that third-party debtors at times engaged in severe behavior to successfully collect on debts. For example, collectors testified they had threatened debtors with jail or called debtors every 5 minutes throughout an entire workday. To combat these practices, Congress enacted the FDCPA in 1977 to, among other things, ban false, deceptive, or misleading representations in connection with the collection of any debt. The Act excludes from its requirements any officer or employee of the United States or any state who collects debt as part of his official duties. The District Court granted summary judgment for the defendants, the special counsel in this case. It concluded the special counsel are state officers outside the scope of the FDCPA. In the alternative, the District Court held the special counsel's use of state attorney general letterhead was not a misrepresentation. The Sixth Circuit vacated the District Court's judgment, concluding that the special counsel debt collectors are more like independent contractors and not state officers. The Sixth Circuit also found the special counsel's use of letterhead potentially misled consumers into believing the state attorney general, rather than outside counsel, was attempting to reclaim the consumer's debt. Judge Sutton issued a strongly worded dissent. The Supreme Court granted cert on two issues. First, whether the special counsel are state officers outside the scope of the FDCPA, and second, whether the special counsel's use of attorney general letterhead violated the FDCPA's prohibition on misleading representations in debt collection. To prevail in the Supreme Court and defend the Sixth Circuit's remand of the case for trial, the respondents who owed money to the state would have had to acquire a favorable ruling on both questions. The Sixth Circuit's decision would be reversed if the court agreed with petitioners either that the special counsel were state officers or the petitioner's use of attorney general letterhead was not a false misrepresentation. In the end, the court declined to reach the first issue. Assuming arguendo that the special counsel debt collectors are not officers and are therefore subject to the FDCPA, the court held nonetheless that the use of state attorney general letterhead accurately conveyed that the special counsel collect debts on behalf of and as instructed by the state attorney general. So the facts leading to this case are as follows. Respondent Pamela Gilley owed money to a state-run Ohio hospital. She received a letter on the Ohio Attorney General's letterhead referencing her unpaid medical claim. The letter included a notice that it was from a debt collector. It was signed from Eric Jones, who referred to himself as outside counsel for the Attorney General's office. Similarly, respondent Hazel Meadows owed money to a state university. Meadows had contacted petitioner Sharif's law firm inquiring about the balance of her debt. In response, the firm sent a debt collection letter on Attorney General letterhead describing the balance due. The letter also included the law firm's name and address and the title, Special Counsel to the Attorney General. Respondents Gilley and Meadows contended the letters were confusing and somewhat frightening. Even though the district court had dismissed respondents' claims on summary judgment, the Sixth Circuit reversed. It found two distinct violations of the FDCPA's prohibition against misrepresentations. In addition to Section 1692E's general bar on false representations, Section 1692E gives a non-exhaustive list of 16 specific examples of conduct that constitutes false representation. The two examples relevant to this case are subsection 1692E9 and 1692E14. Subsection 1692E9 bars the use of written communication that falsely appears to be a document authorized or issued by a government official. Subsection 1692E14 bars debt collectors from using any name other than the true name of the debt collector's business or organization. The Sixth Circuit found that the special counsel's letters clearly were a technical violation of the FDCPA. The letterhead implied the letters actually were issued by the Attorney General rather than by special counsel at a private firm. The Sixth Circuit said this misrepresentation might have been mitigated by the special counsel's identification of themselves later on in the letters, but in the Sixth Circuit's view, there was still enough of a question of misrepresentation that summary judgment dismissal was inappropriate. According to the Sixth Circuit, the least sophisticated consumer might improperly conclude from the letterhead that the Attorney General was threatening action against him or her. Judge Sutton strongly criticized this point in dissent, observing that debtors might conclude the letters threaten consequences because there, in fact, are consequences for nonpayment of public debt. Nothing about the letterhead was misleading in Judge Sutton's view. In addition to its analysis on false and misleading acts, the majority in the Sixth Circuit also found the special counsel were not state officers. The officer analysis, an issue the Supreme Court ultimately declined to reach, arguably is much more complex than the issue of whether the letters were misleading. The FDCPA excludes state officers and employees from its scope, but the Act provides no definition for the term officer. Therefore, all parties in the case agreed the definition of officer is informed by Title I, Section 1 of the U.S. Code, known as the Dictionary Act. Unless the context of a particular statutory provision indicates otherwise, the Dictionary Act establishes that a statutory reference to officer means any person authorized by law to perform the duties of the office. The Dictionary Act does not go on to define the term office. Because the Dictionary Act itself is not very detailed, the parties also generally agreed that the Dictionary Act incorporated Supreme Court cases and common law relevant to the historic meaning of the term officer around the time the Dictionary Act was enacted in 1871. That said, petitioners and respondents had vastly different ideas about what the common law meaning of officer was and whether the special counsel fell within the historic meaning of the term. In the Sixth Circuit, the majority opinion concluded the special counsel were more appropriately classified as independent contractors than as state officers. The majority opinion explained that the FDCPA is a broad remedial statute with limited, clearly defined exceptions. The majority found no reason to dilute the Act's protections by broadly interpreting the exemption for officers to include independent contractors. Judge Sutton issued a strong dissent. He emphatically disagreed with both of the majority's conclusions. He felt the special counsel's letters accurately conveyed the counsel were acting on behalf of the Attorney General to collect debts. Moreover, he pointed out, the Attorney General had explicitly instructed the special counsel to use his letterhead. Judge Sutton also squarely disagreed with the majority's finding that the special counsel are not officers. He spent a significant portion of his dissent emphasizing relevant principles of federalism. Judge Sutton noted that when applying the FDCPA to a state's exercise of sovereignty, it is important to be attentive to the proper balance between state and federal authority. In particular, Judge Sutton highlighted the Supreme Court's opinion in Gregory v. Ashcroft. The Gregory clear statement principle bars courts from interpreting ambiguous federal statutes to alter a state's structuring of its own government or to regulate core functions of state sovereignty. Judge Sutton asserted that deputizing private lawyers to act as assistant attorneys general makes them officers of the state for collection purposes. Any other interpretation would empower Congress to micromanage the state's debt collection system. Debt collection is a core sovereign function of the states. Under Gregory, federal courts should interpret Ohio's special counsel as subject to the FDCPA only if the special counsel clearly fell outside the officer exemption. The plaintiffs in this case conceded the term officer is ambiguous and open to multiple interpretations. Judge Sutton observed that under Gregory, that concession should have been the end of this case. In the Supreme Court, petitioners and respondents echoed many of the arguments raised in the Sixth Circuit's majority and dissenting opinions. Petitioners also delved much deeper into the historical common law understanding of the term officer. Petitioners contended that it was incorrect to see independent contractors as an entirely distinct category from officers. Also, petitioners argued that officer could have different meanings in different contexts. For example, they argued the meaning of officer in the Dictionary Act was somewhat broader than the meaning of officer in the Constitution. Petitioners said that officer in the Dictionary Act reaches everyone authorized to perform public duties. Petitioners disagreed that such a broad interpretation of officer would gut the protections of the FDCPA. First, petitioners asserted that the Act's exemption for officers of private organizations should be interpreted more narrowly than the exemption for public officers. Also, petitioners contended that the public officer exemption was itself somewhat limited because it encompassed only actors engaged in public or sovereign duties. Therefore, special counsel handling public funds would qualify as officers. Run-of-the-mill contractors involved in activities like land management or construction would not. Finally, petitioners also contended that use of the letterhead accurately conveyed that the Attorney General had authorized special counsel to send debt collection letters on his behalf. In contrast, respondents strongly insisted that the letterhead was misleading. At bottom, this disagreement between the parties boiled down to the parties' competing emphases on distinct aspects of 1692E's bar against misrepresentations. Subsection 1692E9 prohibits any written communication that falsely represents it is a document authorized, issued, or approved by any state official. To petitioners, the use of the letterhead clearly was okay because the Attorney General had permitted, in fact had mandated, that the special counsel use his letterhead. Thus, the use of letterhead clearly was authorized under the FDCPA. In contrast, respondents honed in on the distinct statutory term issued. Respondents contended that letterhead typically suggests a letter has been issued by the party named on the letterhead. Here, that insinuation would have been false. The debt collection letters were issued by the special counsel, not by the Attorney General. At oral argument, the U.S. Solicitor General's office provided support for this argument. The Solicitor General's office agreed the use of letterhead amounts to an assertion that the party listed on the letterhead is the party issuing the letter. For that very reason, when the federal government utilizes third parties in its debt collection efforts, third-party collectors do not use federal government letterhead. In addition to the Solicitor General's participation in the case, Michigan and 11 other states filed an amicus brief reflecting Judge Sutton's emphasis on federalism in his dissent. The state's brief pointed out that all states, to varying degrees, delegate some of their sovereign debt collection power to non-state employees. The amicus brief indicated that state debt collection systems would be better protected from unwarranted federal intrusion if the court found that third-party collectors acting on behalf of a state were officers exempt from the FDCPA. At oral argument, however, several justices seemed deeply skeptical of the contention that the special counsel are state officers. For example, Justice Kagan thought Congress could have much more clearly exempted third-party collectors for the state if that, in fact, was what Congress had intended. Justice Sotomayor expressed concern that petitioners were trying to classify the special counsel as officers when Ohio had already conceded the counsel are independent contractors. Justice Sotomayor noted it would be novel to conclude that an independent contractor could also be a public officer. The justices then posed tough questions for respondents' counsel about the separate issue of whether the letterhead was misleading. Justice Ginsburg described a hypothetical letter with an opening sentence that says, "We write to you as special counsel to the Attorney General who has authorized us to collect a debt you owe to X government agency." Respondents conceded such a letter would be okay as long as it was not issued on Attorney General letterhead. Justice Alito said he did not really see the distinction between this hypothetical letter and the use of attorney general letterhead. Justice Alito then asked whether the state could solve the problem by creating a special seal for the debt collections program that would appear along with the attorney general's name in the letterhead. Respondents' counsel said this would not fix the problem and would still be highly misleading. In the end, the justices clearly just disagreed. During oral argument, Justice Kagan suggested the use of letterhead really had no impact on the messages sent to consumers by the debt collection letters. Justice Kagan said the letters basically communicated two messages. First, that the consumer owes money to the state. Second, that the person signing the letter acts as an agent to the state. Both messages are in fact true. In the end, the court's opinion unanimously agreed with petitioners that the use of the letterhead was not misleading. The court referenced Justice Ginsburg's hypothetical letter from oral argument, which referenced the attorney general only in the body of the letter. In the court's view, there is no meaningful distinction between such a letter, which respondents conceded was permissible, and the special counsel's use of official letterhead. Both types of documents accurately represent the fact that special counsel worked closely with the state attorney general. Next, the court concluded that special counsel had also complied with 1692E14's requirement that the debt collector use his organization's true name. The counsel's letters accurately identified the attorney general's office as responsible for collection of the debt and the special counsel as affiliated with that office. Because the court found the letters permissible under the Act, it did not have to reach the issue of whether the special counsel are state officers. In avoiding the resolution of that question, the court issued a much narrower ruling than it might have otherwise. If the court had evaluated whether the special counsel were state officers, the court likely would have had to revisit the historic meaning of officer in the Dictionary Act. The court may have weighed in on the question whether independent contractors can also qualify as officers in the U.S. Code, at least in certain circumstances. Such an analysis could have had a fairly wide-reaching impact. The court's interpretation of officer in the Dictionary Act would have applied to every use of the term officer in the U.S. Code, except where the specific statutory context indicates otherwise. Also, any ruling by the court that Ohio public debt collectors were officers exempt from the FDCPA may have insulated numerous other similar state schemes from the federal act. As it stands, however, the court's limited fact-bound determination about Ohio's letterhead means the court's ruling may have little application moving forward for other state debt collection schemes. The state's amicus brief did not indicate that any other state necessarily engages in the particular letterhead practice that the court approved here in this case, and the Supreme Court left open for another day any definitive resolution of whether and to what extent state third-party debt collectors generally must comply with the FDCPA. The court's holding in Sharif was a fairly narrow way for the court to resolve this case. That said, one aspect where the court did reach out beyond the facts of the case was its reference to federalism near the end of the opinion. The court referenced the Gregory clear statement principle as extra support for its decision not to bar Ohio's practices. The court disputed the Sixth Circuit's concerns that the letterhead is too intimidating and confusing. It noted that under Gregory and Nixon versus Missouri Municipal League, courts must be thoughtful when construing federal law in a way that might interfere with the state's ability to structure its own government. The court here did not expressly limit the Gregory and Nixon principle to cases just where the law is ambiguous. Rather, it described a general principle that courts must not use federal law to interfere with state governmental arrangements unless there is good cause to do so.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.